T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
To our friends at Hawthorne, can't wait to have their Racino. Let's get a timeline on that. Or maybe an educated guess. Joe Ostrowski with you on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mitch Armantrout of the Sun-Times joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. On Twitter, at Mitch Trout, at a fascinating column today in the Sun-Times, trying to get a sports betting update. But first, Mitch, let's start with your White Sox here. If the offseason is Grandal, Wheeler, and Cole Hamels, is that a home run for you?
That's a grand slam for me. I love that. I mean, I think that that's maybe a little optimistic, but, man, if they can get Wheeler, I would be truly shocked and pleased. But, yeah, Hamels, I think, is more reasonable, and yeah. I'd love to see him, you know, teaching some of those younger arms we got going. But hey, that sounds great to me.
The New York Post was writing earlier this evening that it couldn't be even before the winter meetings conclude next week. They're talking about $100 million. One of the four teams mentioned by Joel Sherman was the White Sox. And I saw some Sox fans complaining about Cole Hamels. I'm like, are you kidding me? I know White Sox fans. I've been talking to them much of my lives. I know they're going to find anything to complain about. But I was just like, Cole Hamels, at one point last year, he was by far the best pitcher in the Cubs rotation. And you're talking about slotting him as a 3 or a 4? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that's I would say that's a little bit of an upgrade over Hernandez from last year. So,
Dylan Covey.
Yeah, sign me up.
Absolutely. All right, so you got my attention today. Your column in the Sun-Times, just about some of these projections out there on what sports betting could be coming up in the next few years once it finally launches. Fill our audience in.
So, obviously, I think the last time we talked, it was, 3 or 4 months ago, we were trying to get an idea of when sports betting was going to launch here. It's been 6 months since the law was signed, and, yeah, not a heck of a lot has changed in that time. But we are slowly inching towards a sports betting launch, it looks like, hopefully. Today I kind of took a look at some forecasting from a few gaming consulting firms on what they think is possible in Illinois. And basically, one company, one of the more optimistic forecasts, says that Illinoisans will be putting down about $5.2 billion, with a B, dollars by 2023, so within the next 4 years. And kind of putting that in perspective, the handle in Nevada was about $5 billion last year. So at least some firms think that the market in Illinois is strong enough that it's going to be, competing in, a few hundred million behind Nevada in only a few years after launch. So that's pretty optimistic. And obviously, any forecast like this, you kind of have to take with a grain of salt. I mean, these are the companies that are trying to get a stake in the industry. So, the rosier the better from their perspective, and especially that helps get things kind of moving along here. We're kind of waiting for in Illinois, regulators are supposed to start issuing the operators licenses or applications for the licenses sometime this month. Mm-hmm. So initially, some of the lawmakers who first passed the bill, they kind of said, hey, we can get this up and running in time for football. Obviously, that has not happened. I would say the longer end of the initial estimates was by the Super Bowl. I think that's still a long shot, but it's definitely within sight, I guess. We still don't really have a hard timeline yet, though. So that's kind of what's disappointing for a lot of fans, I guess.
Yeah, that's the question I get. I know you probably get it just about every single day as well. Many of those lawmakers were hoping for at least the Super Bowl. Figure that would be a heck of a kickoff celebration. But I think that's a long shot. I think that they should focus on March Madness. I think that'd be pretty good.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say exactly how long it'll go from here, because you figure if the applications go out in December, I mean, who knows how long they'll give the casinos, the racetracks, and the stadiums where all these sports books are going to be. You know, that's going to take at least a month or two, you would think, to get those all in order. Although, I mean, they're kind of scrambling they want a piece of the action now too. So they're definitely incented to get those applications in quick. And then it's a matter of the turnaround for vetting those applications and getting those licenses handed out. But you'd like to think, yeah, March, you know, so you're looking at 4 or 5 months, that's possible. But, you know, Illinois is not exactly known for bureaucratic efficiency. So
especially with gambling.
Yeah.
Have you heard any rumblings about specific locations? Once licenses are handed out, they'd be ready to go pretty quick?
Well, there's for now, there's a pretty finite number of places that can get them. So, and for the most part, all of them are going to want to get in on it. And that includes the casinos. We've got 10 casinos in Illinois right now. Pretty much all of them have indicated that they're gonna go for a sports betting license. The other ones are the racetracks. We've got 3 of those right now. They're trying to open a 4th one, but that's a kind of a long story otherwise.
Oh boy. I live right there. I'm in Tinley, so yeah.
Okay.
There's a whole mess going on.
Right. Tinley Park was kind of in line for a racetrack, and some of the background of the developer behind that plan came out, and that plan's not going forward anymore. So they're kind of scrambling to find another racetrack plan. God knows that'll take a long time. But yeah, so as far as where sports books are going to be, you got the 10 casinos, 3 racetracks, and then I think the most interesting one is, you know, the sports stadiums. Mm-hmm. The law, any stadium with that holds 17,000 people or more, they can open their own sports book within 5 blocks or inside the stadium. So pretty much anywhere you go in Chicago as far as sports, I mean, that counts the Cell, Wrigley Field, Soldier Field, United Center. All those, it's going to be interesting to see how these teams kind of embrace that. And lawyers for the teams have indicated that they're definitely going to go for those sports betting licenses. So that's where you're going to be able to do it probably within the next year. And then after that, within the first 18 months of this law kind of going live, the online-only operators like FanDuel and DraftKings, then they'll be able to get their licenses too, and then you'll be able to do it anywhere. So it's coming to a cell phone and a sports stadium near you very soon.
Well, the you're right. That's the most interesting aspect, and it would be the first city in the country that would allow that, where you have it at the venues. But the question for me is, how do you think it's going to exist? Are we talking inside the stadiums or around the stadiums?
Yeah, that's kind of yet to be seen. I mean, you look at a stadium like, you know, Guaranteed Rate Field, where you've got a lot of different kind of fan areas, you know, like kid zones and all that. You can kind of see like a, you know, you could definitely fit in a sports book and bar somewhere there. Wrigley Field's kind of packed as it is, but, you know, with the whole Wrigley Way thing that kind of got going in and around the stadium, you figure they can find some room there. But they're allowed to build those sports books within 5 blocks of the stadium. And but even as far as laying out the rules for this whole law, there's some bickering over exactly what constitutes 5 blocks, whether that's a
shocking,
you know. It's hard to actually define exactly how long that is. So that's one thing that the gaming board is hammering out, and that's kind of what's one of the many reasons that this rollout is kind of dragging on. But, yeah, you definitely think that all these teams are going to want to cash in on that opportunity.
Joe Ostrowski with Mitch Armantrout of the Sun-Times, Sports Radio 670, The Score. I want to go back to your piece today about this projection of $5.2 billion could be wagered on sports in Illinois by 23 and how realistic this is. You know, when I first saw that number, my reaction was, wow, that's crazy. But then the more you think about it, maybe it isn't. I talk to a bunch of bookmakers all the time on my You Better You Bet show, and that's the one thing they always bring up about how the Chicago fan base bets so much money every single year on their team. We've seen the handle over in Hammond, Indiana, right over the border, how much the Chicago sports fans are going over the border and betting on these Bears games. And the same thing's going to happen during the baseball season, of course. And then on Twitter, we had some other people in the industry chiming in and saying that, you know, $5.2 billion, it would probably be a disappointment if Illinois isn't past that level.
Right. You know, at this point, since last year, there's a Supreme Court decision that kind of opened the door to sports betting outside of Vegas. And New Jersey has really set the kind of the gold standard for how to do the rollout. And the odds are that that's kind of the model that Illinois is going to be kind of looking at. Certainly what Indiana and Iowa have done on either side of us. But yeah, as far as New Jersey, I mean, they're competing with Nevada already. And, you know, they might make a strong push to the top $5 billion in the handle by the end of the year. I've seen some estimates it's maybe more like $4.5 billion. But, you know, that's only 1 year after launching. I mean, that's just incredible. And you would think, you know, in Illinois, like you said, I mean, a lot of bettors are already jumping over the border to Indiana. That's a state that in the first month, the handle there was about $93 million. So that's just really taking off quick. And like you said, I mean, fans in Chicago and the whole state are pretty passionate. I thought it was kind of funny. One of the firms that I cited in that story is this French consulting firm. And they noted that, you know, there's a very strong sports tradition in Illinois. And they talked about the quote, great professional teams that we have, which I thought was a little generous given the struggles of my beloved Bears and, you know, just about every other team in town this last year. But yeah, I mean, if nothing else, the fans are definitely into watching other sports and betting on other teams, maybe ones that are a little more successful than we've been these last couple of years. So the potential is definitely there.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, so what we do know, we don't know a lot, but what we do know is the Illinois Gaming Board meets again in 2 weeks, Thursday, December 19th. What are you expecting out of that meeting?
Well, based on the last meeting, they said that these sports betting operator applications might be out even before that meeting. So hopefully, I mean, those could be coming out any day now. But hopefully by that next meeting on the 19th, we will have a definite timeline, or at least a ballpark timeline of when they think it can go live. I mean, if those applications are coming out, then that would indicate that their rulemaking process that's been dragging on for this whole time, that's pretty much wrapped up. And, you know, it's just a matter of doing the work of vetting those applications. So hopefully we'll have a better idea of whether or not we'll be able to put some bets down in time for the Super Bowl or March Madness. That's what I'll be looking out for sure.
Yeah. I get the frustration. It's certainly understandable, but you know, there's always people coming in with their jokes. Well, are you sure it's going to be ready by 2023? and it's, I get it, but I don't think anybody was saying that it would be up and running in December.
Right.
Right. I mean, the realistic people were saying, okay, it would be quick, but maybe an outside shot at the Super Bowl.
Right. And the other thing you have to consider, too, is, you know, New Jersey, they were able to get their thing up and running so quickly because, you know, this is something that lawmakers there have been fighting for years and years, and they were basically just waiting for the Supreme Court decision to give them the green light. And typically in the last year, I mean, other states, it's taken closer to a year to go from legalization to launch. And I think as far as our delay, it just kind of exacerbated by, you know, seeing it go live so quickly in Indiana and Iowa, but they had that that New Jersey model to kind of follow. So hopefully Illinois will be able to, hopefully they have been able to use that model and will be able to turn around in a fairly quick manner here in the next few months.
Mitch, before I let you go, actually, a texter brought up a really good question that I should give to you because I don't have much info on it, asking about Arlington Park. Do you have any idea what's going on there?
Well, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know. One thing that was a key part of the gambling bill that passed over the summer was that racino provision that allows the racetracks to add casino games. Obviously, horse racing has really struggled over the last few decades. Purses have just been decimated over the years. Trainers are going to other states where they can make more money. And for years, the owners of Arlington and Hawthorne and Fairmount down near St. Louis, they've been pushing hard to get those casino games, just as a means of kind of staying alive, so that you know they can keep on racing with the supplemental revenue from casino games. And so finally, after you know literally 20 years of trying to get that law passed, lo and behold, Arlington, the owners, turned around this summer and said, "Oh, no thanks. Those taxes are too high for." A little too rich for our blood, so we're going to pass on that casino option, which was came as a shock to the horsemen, obviously, who've been fighting for this for so many years. So that's really just drawn the wrath of you know, the racing board and the entire racing community. As it stands now, Arlington has still not applied for a casino license, but they say they are going to apply for a sports betting license once that opens up. So. As far as the future of Arlington, the owners have said they'll stay there at least through 2021, but they've kind of left it open-ended after that. So that's something we're definitely watching pretty closely. It's definitely up in the air.
Yeah, fascinating. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. Hopefully we'll get some answers, like you mentioned, in a couple of weeks at the next IGB meeting. Mitch Armantrout of the Sun-Times. Follow him on Twitter at Mitch Trout. Thank you, Mitch. Doing a great job.
Thanks a lot, Joe, and I look forward to the next big Sox signing.
I think it's coming soon. Maybe Zach Wheeler, $100 million. Mitch, a big White Sox fan. Some good information there from Mitch Armantrout, Sports Radio 670, The Score. I tweeted out a link to his story. If you're interested in any of this, I suggest you check it out. And if you're on Twitter, check out the conversation. There are a lot of people chiming in that are involved in the industry and saying, yeah, $5.2 billion by 2023 in this state? It's really not that much. A lot of people expecting the handle in Illinois, once sports betting is up and running and it's on your phones, that more money will be bet in Illinois than Nevada. That's crazy. But that's where Jersey is already. And they just launched. It took a while. They were still trying to figure stuff out not that long ago. Different world. So it's going to happen eventually. I know it. I get the jokes about maybe 2021, 2022. But Mitch and I are in agreement there that it's probably going to be a few more months. Just not going to get it for football season. Brian Scalabrine was on The Score this morning, and he was fantastic. If you missed it with Mully and Hall, I'm going to bring some of that back next, especially on the Bulls and what's going on in the NBA right now. We'll get to that. And then Julie DeCaro transition later on in the hour. Her show's coming up at 10 o'clock. You've got the Joe O Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Joe O, nights 6 to 10.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Northwestern Basketball hosts number 3 Michigan State at the New Welsh Ryan Arena on December 18th. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at InUSports.com. So I do You Better You Bet on Radio.com Sports, and a great show on there is Scal and Pals. Especially when Kendrick Perkins is on. I retweeted one of the videos. He was calling out Kyrie Irving. Very entertaining. And he's on our show from time to time. I love it because he swears and he doesn't hold back. He gives his true opinion about everyone in the NBA. So if you weren't up this morning at 6:40, Brian Scalabrine was on the Mully and Haw show. I thought it was so strong. Some of the info he had on Markkanen, his opinion on Jim Boylan, and what to do with Coby White moving forward for the rest of his rookie season. You're going to absolutely love this, especially if you're a Bulls fan. Take a listen. This is this morning on Sports Radio 670, The Score with the White Mamba.
Well, Brian, here in Chicago, the Bulls are not exactly off to the start they envisioned. Last night, they get a victory out in Sacramento. The 1-2 on the West Coast swing. Been disappointing year, no question about it. One of the biggest mysteries surrounds Lauri Markkanen. Last night was the first time this season that he and Zach LaVine both scored 20 or more points. Uh-huh. When you watch the Bulls, does his lack of productivity baffle you the most, or what is it if it's not that?
So, you know, and listen, I could be completely wrong by this, but the way I look at basketball is you want to win in the NBA nowadays, especially with the lack of physical contact. One, you have to have a guy that you go to down the stretch. Now, that could be Zach LaVine, but a guy you can really count on to get you buckets in the last 4 minutes if you have a close game. The problem when I watch the Bulls, and in particular Lauri Markkanen, is the ball doesn't move as freely as it should. Now, I get it. They're low turnover, which is important. They take care of the basketball, and defensively they're active with their hands, and that's part of it. I think they lead the league in turnover differential, but the issue is, every time the ball passes, there's like a quarter second delay. Like, I'm going to get mine. Well, I can't. Now I move it. When the ball moves freely, Lauri Markkanen will be good because that's the type of player he is. Like, dude, if you're moving the ball around the perimeter and he gets a wide open shot and now he knocks it down, somewhere down the road, his man's going to start creeping towards him and now the lane's going to open up. It's the NBA that we play in now. And quick decision makers make the difference. So, when the Bulls start moving the ball freely and they start sharing, you know, I think they're, 22nd, 23rd in assist. Once they start creeping that number up, Markkanen will play better, and I think they will play better because they do a lot of good things. The only thing that really stands out to me is everyone's looking to get theirs when they get the ball, and that's not conducive to being successful in the league the way the league is called, especially in the regular season and especially the first 44 minutes of the game.
Well, you know what's confusing is this is a team that has been in games but doesn't know how to close them. It's almost as if they don't, like, you know, they don't know who their go-to guy is, and Zach LaVine is convinced it's him, and that doesn't always work. How does a team learn how to close? That seems to be their biggest problem. And even last night, they were up 19 at one point, and it ended up, you know, at the end of the game, they're kind of clutching for a win again.
Yeah, I mean, I think for them, it will be like, and this is like, big time players close, big time, like top tens. Even there's some special players out there, like a Lou Williams type of guy to close. There are some players that can close. Like Zach LaVine is not at that point now where every night, if you give him the ball, you know you're going to get good shots or from his shot or somebody else's shot. So they got to do it a little bit differently. Like, I cover the Boston Celtics. I go to all their games. Over the course of time, Brad Stevens has changed. He's in the past gone with a play, a ball movement, you know, a dribble handoff to a kick ahead to a look inside to a look weak side. Like, they've done things as a team. But when he had Kyrie, or now he has Kemba and Jason Tatum, like, now he's the more – let's give the ball to these guys, and we think that we can get a good shot. It's not the way that a lot of people want to play, but for the Bulls, and I'm not sure that they're in that area yet. They got to play with ball movement down the stretch. They got to move the ball side to side and try to get some late action down the stretch, not just give the ball to one guy, have a bunch of people standing around, and all of a sudden see if you can win. No, come off the screen with Wendell Carter. Get the ball to the second side. Have Kobe White try to get to the lane. Now move it from there. Like, that's the biggest thing for them down the stretch and during the game. I just don't think they move it side to side fast enough.
Brian, reading body language can be dangerous, but there have been a couple snippets where you watch Jim Boylan interact with his players, and it seems as if they might be tuning him out a little bit, and there might be not all on the same page at all times. And you wonder about the effect over time of a rah-rah coach on a young team. Today is the anniversary of Jim Boylan taking over as the head coach of the Bulls. And I just wonder, from the outside looking in, I know that he gets a lot of criticism and scrutiny here in Chicago. But outside the city, what is the perception of Jim Boylan and the job he's doing with the Bulls?
Yeah, so it's I know he's a good coach. No, there's no doubt about that. He knows how to coach. He knows basketball. I've watched him operate. He knows exactly how to hold a lead typically, and you know what a team's strengths are and taking away and what to emphasize with his team. I know that. The issue is, going back to what you said just 1 year ago, the idea that, if you remember early on, he was doing the wholesale subs. He was like, in a way, it's like calling his team out, calling out your starters, saying like, these guys didn't bring it today, so let's put them on the bench. And that's, you know, NBA players can handle that, you know, once in a while. NBA players could say, you know what, like, coach is right, we got to be better today. But if it's always the player's fault, it's you know, like, if after the game if he doesn't say things like, hey, that's on me, I got to do a better job of getting my guys ready. We can't come out, you know, 14-2 starting the game. Like, if when they came out and did this, like, my team was not prepared. And so there has to be some level of accountability from him. Now, I'm not saying he's not doing that, but the players have to feel that. They have to know, like, that he's taking responsibility just as much as they are. Because when you heard earlier in the year that he benched Zach LaVine, and Zach was like, how is that all on me? How is our bad start just fall on me? And then he says, well, hey, you blew three defensive assignments during that time. Like, you want to go down that road, by all means do it. But that's a dangerous road to go down when a player has $80 million coming to him in a guaranteed contract. And he can, and there are plenty of other suitors out there for Zach LaVine to say, yeah, no problem. You don't want me? You don't want to play me? Someone else will take me on. Because a lot of other coaches or organizations will think to themselves, like, of course, we'll take his talent because our culture, and we'll get him to do what we want him to do. We would not call him out the way that they do. So it's a dangerous road to go on as a head coach, but you do have to hold your team accountable. I just think that balance is a very tricky one.
Brian, I don't know if this is an aberration, and I don't know how you feel about plus minus, but yesterday the Bulls reserves, every one of them, a double digit plus and plus minus, and all five starters a minus.
So are you saying
I'm saying
a change in? Yeah, I mean, that happens
35-24 with the reserves over, you know, bench points. And the reserves are playing better than the starters, I guess, if you like plus minus.
They're also going against reserves.
Yeah, exactly.
Also,
right.
You know what I mean? So that, you have to factor that in. Listen, starting lineup changes could happen. You know, I always find, and no fault to the media, it does seem to make a lot of sense, right? Like, hey, we're not getting off the good starts. We need to switch things up. But the basketball is a funny sport. It is so easy to turn something around. It could be an effort play. It could be trying to get out and running early versus like slowing the pace down. So yeah, when the backups come in and they play free, or if the backups are down by 15 and they build themselves back in, and then the starters come back and they lose the lead again, it's always different. Like playing up 20 is different than playing down 20. Like there's all those dynamics into it. But if you're consistently getting off to a bad start, then either A, you make a change, which I'm not a big proponent of. I think it's more B, we emphasize getting off to a good start. We emphasize what are the two things we need to do in this first quarter to get off to a good start. We're not rebounding the ball. We're not moving the ball. We're not attacking the paint. Whatever they are, NBA players are more than capable of doing it, and their roster is a good roster. They're more than capable of going out there and doing it. It's just what coaches decide to emphasize during those first 12 minutes of, or even let's cut it even down further. The first 6 minutes of the game, there is an issue. What is the issue? Emphasize that. And listen, other issues will pop up over the course of 82 games. But whatever Coach Boylan has to decide, like this is the way for us to take our game to the new level or to get off to a good start. Those are the things that have to be done. Now, going back to the Zach LaVine benching, if it was defensively, we have to have a presence on the ball. We have to impact the ball. We can't just be soft defensively in the first quarter. And if Zach LaVine didn't do it, then you have to take him out because you emphasize that as it's clear as day to everybody. The issue comes when you're not emphasizing things, you're not telling players what your expectations are going into that first quarter or going into, you know, a different way to start the half. You guys remember the unbelievable Bulls teams. Like Michael Jordan and that 72 win team, his whole thing was, I want to be sitting in the fourth quarter. So we got to come out like gangbusters in the third and push this lead up. And that was their emphasis. And night in and night out, they tried to accomplish that goal.
Okay, good point. So more specifically then, when you look at Coby White, and I think that a quarter way through this season, I've liked the way that they have used him with the second team coming off the bench because I think that he's a rookie. You incorporate him slowly. He's 19 years old. All those things are still true. At the same time, if you're looking for a spark immediately, how long before you're tempted to start him? And would that make any bit of a difference?
Yeah, so that's interesting. It would go like the way that I would look at – this is how I look at all young players, right? Remember – young players have played, they played AAU, but it's not as intense as the NBA. They've gone to college. They've played 30-something games. During that time, just even an NBA 32 minutes is so different than a college, you know, 36 minutes. So when it comes to a young player, the development would more than just like, hey, everyone thinks, just throw him out there and play him a bunch, and then he'll get good someday. Sometimes it's about like pacing a guy the right way. So you look at Coby White. When I watch him play, I think he's a hard-playing guy. I'm not sure that he can play 35 minutes a night over the course of 82 or over the course of what we call like 3.75, and that's what the average amount of games are per week for these guys. So maybe his minutes, it makes sense for him to play free with the second unit, go out there, and we want to keep him at 22, and then 2 months in, we want to put him at, you know, 26. So when I would focus on a young player, I would focus on with my medical, and there's all, you know, sports science. It wouldn't just be like what I decide to do. It would be like, how can we get it so we can build his minutes up by the end of the year, but we don't want him to have a nagging injury. I'll give you an example. In Boston, Gordon Hayward, you guys remember the horrific injury.
Right.
They had this huge game plan for Jason Tatum to be able to develop, but still be able to work out, get in the weight room, get his shots up, work on some of his weaknesses. Gordon Hayward goes down. That's 32 minutes that you now have to fill. Jason Tatum took those minutes. But during that first year, a lot of things had to slip because he was playing so many minutes and his body was not capable of handling the weight, developing him his game, and playing the minutes that he had to play. In the Bulls situation, the way that they used Coby White, They could develop him. They can get him a little bit stronger during the season, which is a lot of times the best thing for him in his career over the course of whatever it's 5, 10, 15 years.
That was Brian Scalabrine this morning on Sports Radio 670, The Score with the Mully and Haas Show. Great stuff. He's a daily host on radio.com sports. I highly suggest you check out Scal and Pals. And a bunch of people text again during the interview. Can Scal coach the Bulls? Can we get him as a head coach? Man knows what he's talking about. I thought it was a fantastic listen. So I thought it was worth your while, worth your time tonight to make sure that you guys heard some of that, some strong stuff. I thought what he said about Coby White, a natural thing. Anytime there's some success there, well, get him in the starting lineup. Get him in the starting lineup. Maybe that isn't the best thing. Maybe that isn't what you want out of him, especially in his rookie season as you're trying to build him up as he's learning things in his rookie campaign. So some really good stuff. As usual, our interviews always available in podcast form over on 670 thescore.com. Forgot to mention this when I was on the air last night, so I want to make sure I put it out there this evening. Congrats to all the high schools who won state championships and all the ones that were able to participate over the weekend in DeKalb. There are actually some great stories. I know in Chicago, such a pro sports town, but just to see Mount Carmel with Jordan Lynch as the head coach, he's coaching his younger brother as the quarterback. He's, what, 29 years old? He takes over for legendary Frank Lenny. I think he won 11 state championships. And then under Jordan Lynch, they win another state title, a 7A title. And then Lincoln Way East won an 8A title. I thought that was really cool because I live right by Lincoln Way East, so I try to get to a couple of games each year. They won their third state title, so I've kind of adopted them because it's not like St. Pat's ever has a great, great football program or a basketball school over the years. So that was really cool to see Lincoln Way East win another state title. I've done it a couple times over the last few years. So congrats to everyone, Mount Carmel, Lincoln Way East, and all the schools that were participating over the weekend.
Mainly congrats to the 5A champs, Rochester, because they they beat St. Rita. So that's a big thank you for all the Brother Rice alum. Thank you for beating St. Rita.
I knew you had some sort of an angle. Did you watch the game?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Saw the result and you were happy to see?
Yeah. And I mean, it also kind of sucks too with the 8A because, you know, at least you have Lincoln Way East, but Warren, who got shut out in that game, beat Brother Rice to go there, and Lincoln Way East beat Marist. So we could have had a Pulaski showdown in the Class A finals. And Brother Rice obviously would have won that.
Well, so if I'm still there when my kids are old enough, they would go to Lincoln Way East. But when we moved to our house, that was not the plan. They would have gone to Lincoln Way North, but that's a whole mess with a bunch of crooks involved. That school was closed down after just a handful of years. And every time I go over there, because they still have soccer and there's a gym over there, they hold, you know, there's kids' basketball over there, so my kids go for some of that stuff. I get mad every time I walk into that damn building. It's nearly a brand new high school closed down. So what do you know? There's crooks out there trying to steal. And I saw this, was it another one of the high schools? I don't want to say which Lincoln Way it was because I might get it wrong. There was a secretary was arrested last week because she skimmed $30,000 or something. Just, God almighty. World that we're living in. Anyways, congrats to the kids. Great job. Julie DeCaro will step in for transition next. I can't wait to get her opinion on some of this Cub stuff, including the Addison Russell news from yesterday. She didn't have a show last night, but she has a show this evening. It will be entertaining. That's next. Joe O Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670. The Score coming up at 10 o'clock. The Julie DeCaro Show. Julie! How you doing?
Can't talk. Hoosiers.
Really?
I mean, we're winning.
Can we talk about the 30 for 30, Bob Knight?
No. I'm not going to talk about it.
It was very good.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, it was so good.
I need to tell you. I spent some time in and around around the basketball program when I was at IU, and that is not the same man that I interacted with on occasion. That's all I'm going to say.
What do you mean?
He was just a much nicer person.
What? Because he had to be? Or is that after everything?
No, it was before.
So you had good positive interactions with...
I did.
With the general.
Yes, I did. I saw some not-so-pleasant ones with other people, but...
How do you feel when people...
It just makes me sad. It was such a special time, you know, at IU. It was we had so much swagger. We were always ranked in the top 10. You know, we were always a force to be dealt with, and it was a good time. And now it's just, you know, we're just kind of there.
Mm.
It's a tough fall, Joe.
Well, it's kind of like Illinois. Like, you're supposed to be a basketball school.
Right? I know.
Yeah. I mean, those days... When we were much, much younger, it was
much, much longer.
Gone.
Yeah, but Lou Henson versus Bob Knight. Those were fun times. Oh, Judd Heathcote was out
Clear
there.
Clear the schedule.
Great.
Yes. And now it's college basketball is a rumor in this city.
Yep.
But DePaul's ain't no.
DePaul.
Tomorrow, Texas Tech.
I know. We're going back to like the Tom Kleinschmidt years. Oh, it's exciting.
I love watching Tom Kleinschmidt on WGN.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I went to law school at DePaul. So did my husband. My dad went to DePaul. My cousin went to DePaul. Like, a ton of DePaul people in our family.
Why'd you go to Indiana?
I can't remember the last time we watched DePaul basketball.
Yeah. If you can find the games for one.
Right, exactly.
They a good amount of their games on FS1 or FS2. Well, how'd you end up at Indiana?
I got waitlisted at a couple schools, and then, like, I got into Michigan, but not into the sports broadcast program because they reserve that for their athletes or something. So I don't
know. What? At Michigan?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So Chris Webber got into that program, not me.
Yeah.
I went to Indiana. Have you ever been to Bloomington?
No, I mean,
it's like heaven. So, no. I mean, once you go there, it's kind of that's it.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
Then, okay. All right. Putting off the inevitable.
Yeah. No one cares about this, Joe. No one cares about why I went to
Indiana. I'm interested. The news came down right as I was going on the air yesterday at about 6 o'clock.
I was listening. What?
Oh.
I texted in. Did you see me?
I did see the Julie text. I didn't know it was you. I just thought it was a texter.
No, it was me.
Oh, you're the only Julie ever listening to this.
This is the story of my life. There's always like 20 Julies, and we all have to use our last names.
Yeah. No, you just wrote Julie.
Dickens knew it was you.
See?
He checked the number.
You just wrote Julie. Okay.
Well, anyway.
I wasn't sure. I didn't see.
Yes, the Addison Russell news coming down. I was sitting there like David Putty, just staring straight ahead, waiting for the non-tender list
to come
out.
That was the only question. I thought they were going to wait until the deadline. The deadline was an hour later, I believe. But anyways, there was no other decision to be made, right? It's just it came a year late.
There wasn't another decision to be made, but I wouldn't have been shocked if they decided to keep him around, especially if David Ross was like, hey, I know this kid. You know, I can straighten him out. That's really what I thought was going to happen. So
you thought he was coming back.
I thought it was 50-50. I thought there was a chance they'd bring him back. I mean, look, I didn't think they'd bring him back. Last year was the year I was like, there's no way they can bring him back. And they did.
They
so
did.
This year I was like.
And now it's all in play.
Yeah.
Because they made that awful decision.
Right.
And then the only reason he's not back, and Theo Epstein made this clear in the statement, is because he was horrible at baseball last year.
Which I don't know what the point was of that statement. I mean,
he didn't want to have a conference call. I guess they felt they had to say something.
Why do you have to say something? I mean, just say, you know, we've decided to move on. Thank you for your time.
I was not happy with that. I thought that even though it wasn't on the air on live TV or live radio, I thought that statement was a bad moment for the Cubs organization.
I thought it wasn't great. I thought it wasn't great. And I also think that just because you're meeting the incredibly low bar Major League Baseball has set for players who have been suspended doesn't mean you're doing things right necessarily in your life. And if I were another team, I would look into some of that stuff.
You think he's going to the Angels?
Baltimore was my first thought. Because, I mean, the answer is always Baltimore, right? Whenever you're like, oh, God, who else is going to take this
guy? And
there
are Cubs ties there.
Right.
And there are Cubs ties, so it's a possibility.
And I had some Baltimore fans reach out to me and be like, oh, my God, what do I need to know about this guy? And I was just, I'm just sending them all Melissa Reedy's blog post because I don't know what else, you know, to say to people. But
I don't even know how you justify it. Just on so whatever. If you want to put the blinders on and only look at the baseball, I don't even know how you justify it then because he's God awful. He doesn't even know. He doesn't know the signs after how many years he's been here.
How do you explain to your fans that you let Manny Machado go and you're replacing him with Addison Russell?
Oh my God.
I mean, is there a bigger, like, you know, flipping the bird to your fans? I don't think so.
In that statement, I mean, Theo told you, even though in front of a microphone, He's going to say all the right things. When they decided to bring Addison Russell back, God, I'm flashing back to that Addison Russell press conference in Mesa. Chris Tannehill was playing some clips from it earlier today. My God. And but he just said, Theo told you, like, oh, he basically said that stuff didn't matter. He was great. Yeah. Everything was great.
I mean,
he's trying to set it up for, I guess, then he gets a landing spot, but it was purely about baseball.
But
because
I don't understand
what he would have gotten in arbitration. It was not in the works here.
I mean, it's the same thing they did with Gabe Kapler, right? Like, they're trying to boost Gabe Kapler up. They're trying to do him a favor by interviewing him and showing, trying to show that they're seriously considering this guy. Why do you feel the need to do that for Gabe Kapler, a guy who has been absolutely horrible when it comes to handling the off-the-field conduct for minor league players? I mean, I as much as I have defended and as much as I want to like Theo Epstein as a person, when it comes to the stuff, I just don't believe him anymore. And I don't care how many domestic violence experts he says he talked to. This issue divided the domestic violence community in this town. A lot of people were really upset in the community with the way he handled it. And I think they put it out there as this is what the domestic violence community is telling us to do, which was not the case. I don't know. It's really upsetting. I'm glad he's not on the team anymore. I'm glad we don't have to talk about it anymore. But I think I don't know that people necessarily feel better about the organization just because they got rid of Addison Russell.
I don't even know which paragraph was the worst part. I mean, because then he says, in the years since we decided to tender Addison a contract last November, he lived up to his promise to put in the important self-improvement work necessary off the field and has shown growth as a person, as a partner, as a parent, and as a citizen. We hope and believe that Addison's work and growth will continue, and we have offered our continued support of him and his family, including Melissa. So, I mean, how do you check him on that? So we're just going to take his word for it.
I've heard from people too, and I would dispute that statement.
Exactly. But then, and then in the third paragraph, it was us, we're great. Talk about everything that we've done over the past year.
I said, every organization needs to have like a woman in there to tell them when they're about to step in it with this stuff.
No statement would have been just fine here.
Yeah, I think so too. You don't owe him anything. He didn't bother to learn the signs.
I mean you can, and they reportedly offered him a 5-year contract at one point, and the decision to bring him back last season. If you want to put that in the file, the growing file of bad Theo Epstein decisions, that's fair.
Yeah, I agree.
He hurt that team.
PR hit they took for him too.
They had 15 second baseman last year.
They took a massive PR hit for this guy, and he didn't even bother to learn the signs.
No.
I can't get over that.
It's just a mess. What are you doing tonight in the show?
Oh, well, we're going to start off talking baseball. I mean, I'm so excited to talk hot stove, and there's finally stuff happening, so we're going to start off talking hot stove. Moon Mullen's going to be here to talk Bears, and then Hamel Javari is going to be here to talk about the horrible stuff happening in the NHL.
Yeah.
It seems to be going largely unremarked upon in a lot of places.
Because it's the NHL.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about it.
How would you feel if Cole Hamels is in the White Sox rotation?
That's fine. I mean, is it going to be the Cole Hamels from the end of last year? I'm okay with that.
Well, what if he's Cole Hamels from June?
I mean, I don't know if I'm willing to take that risk, though. Are you?
If I'm the Sox?
No, if I'm the Cubs.
Oh, it sounded... I don't know if you heard him on the White Sox Talk podcast. It sounded like the Cubs have not even talked to him
well,
at
all.
He's not coming back. There's no shot. But White
I'm fine
Sox,
with that.
I think that'd be pretty good for the back end of the rotation. Be pretty good.
No, I mean, as a five, he's fine, sure.
Zach Wheeler might be there. Looking pretty good.
The Yankees are after Zach Wheeler, though.
Maybe the Sox are going to be better than the Cubs this year. The Reds might be the favorite.
Which would you rather have?
Yeah, let's do that right now. Herb's going to start yelling at people and swearing at them if we do that. So maybe that's not the best idea. Julie DeCaro will be here for the next 2 hours on Sports Radio 670 The Score. So make sure you stick around. I want to thank Sean Zarillo from the Action Network, Mitch Armatrout from the Sun-Times for jumping on the show tonight, producer Sean Anderson, Brandon Orlowski, and the podcast available on 670thescore.com. I will tweet a link if you missed any of the show later on tonight. Follow me on Twitter at Joe0670. Julie's next. Good night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.